Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Welcome in to Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. And coach, we got a lot to talk about. Every week, I think there's something nationally happening in the world of college sports, and I want to get your thoughts on that. I have some ideas to float by you, because I'm going to fix college football in this room with you, coach, and then I'm going to present this to President Donald Trump as they all had this pretty big meeting, an unprecedented meeting as President Donald Trump plans executive order to address college sports issues. And in the document that I've got up on ESPN, I don't have a lot of the details, but Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports is pointing out that there is kind of a belief that maybe this presentation, this all-encompassing executive order could try to potentially reset the clock and take us back to 2019 before NIL and unlimited transfer portals were happening. I don't know if that's just the details of it, but there is a belief that that's some of the idea, which President Trump knows will get shot down. He will get sued. My guess is he's throwing it out there to see why it's getting sued and get maybe some of that language. But coach, it's a wild time in college sports all the time.
Sort of a halftime diversion from the war.
Maybe.
Is that what's going on with President Trump here?
Well, yeah, it was supposed to be an hour-long meeting, and then I suppose it went to 2 hours. I don't know. There's a lot of smart people in that room, and I still don't know if that's going to get it done, because this is a very complicated, convoluted mess surrounding college sports, however you want to look at it.
There are big problems. That'll be fun to get into, because it's all just hinging on whether or not the NCAA or the membership schools are willing to make the student athletes employees. And the basic roadblocks to that are female sports and non-revenue sports, because at that point, you know, there's this push of, okay, well, whatever we do for some, we need to do for all. There's the Title IX implications, et cetera. And so, yes, if you're paying millions of dollars to an overall football roster, then ideally there would be the same number of dollars going towards the female rosters. And then there's the fringe benefits, right? And so, like, I know that at UNC, for every dollar you make, there's a 31 cents that's kind of a fringe benefit to that. And so the university's picking up a lot of extra costs. And so, and I think every you know, employer has that. So the math becomes pretty big. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes, for most schools as well, we have revenue, but we don't necessarily have profit. And so how do these conversations even move forward with those limiting parameters?
Well, it's got to be somewhat frustrating too, because a lot of the national talk is around the schools that are profiting, you know, and not all of them are. Not even the ones in the major conferences are profiting.
There are only about 10. And that's
right.
That's basically because most schools have made a commitment to be competitive to spend what they're making,
yeah,
or outspend a little bit. I think there are only, last I had checked, there are only about 10 schools nationally that are actually in a surplus, and then they send an amount of money back to the university, and it becomes a money-making entity for the university. But 10 out of about 400 Division I schools.
Wow. Well, and you mentioned the other schools, like that becomes an issue too. It's a sticky area, because it's not just football and basketball, men's basketball we're talking about. In this meeting, Sarah Hirschland, the CEO of the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee, she was talking about how they obviously winning a lot of gold medals, Team USA, but how throughout the world, the training, they're starting to spend more money on training these athletes. So she fears that in a time where We're begging for more dollars for specifically for college football. She comes in suddenly, kind of throws a little curveball, and is like, "What about the Olympics in this meeting?" So, like, you're diving all into specifically when we say college sports, we're talking about controlling college football and a little bit of men's basketball. But then there's suddenly all the other sports that you mentioned, and then the Olympic sports, and that throws, I think, that throws a lot of this stuff out of whack, because then suddenly a focus is, well, wait a second, if this is a time where we're desperately trying to get more dollars into football programs, what happens to those other sports? What happens to those Olympic sports too?
Yeah, it's a mess that way, because there are, again, the phrase that keeps coming to mind, it's limiting parameters. There are limitations. I think if you were just going to separate football or basketball, men's football or men's basketball, out from the athletic departments and consider those on their own, what kind of marketing tool is it for a university? What type of revenue does it bring through television dollars, et cetera, or other revenue, ticket sales? Then you could probably fairly easily come up with something that a lot of membership schools in the NCAA would be willing to get behind. But is that the way that universities want to move? And they probably don't, right? Because there's just this history of that sports are co-curricular, that you learn something by participating in women's volleyball, and you learn those same lessons in football and women's basketball, and that's why universities began to support. When I was in high school, the NFL had the scab season. I don't know if you remember that, or you were younger than I am.
Yeah, was that in the 80s?
The cool thing about the scab season was, like, there was no less than interest. So all the NFL players sat out. All the NFL teams just got new rosters, and the stadiums filled up, and it was still on television. And I wonder if that could be the case for college football and college basketball too. How many fans are interested in it because, like, in the Big Sky, for example, the people are filling stadiums. They're not doing it because these are future NFL players. There are some,
yeah,
and that's exciting, but you're doing it to support the school. And my guess is that if all of our players at UNC decided to revolt, I could find 100 more guys walking around campus at UNC that would be willing for a full scholarship to come out and put the pads on and play football, And so that's I think the other side of this. The players have a lot of power right now, and it's cool the direction that it's going. I think it's a great thing for the game, and I think it's great that players are starting to get some extra money. But I also think they have to understand that when we talk about the free market, there's the other side of the free market too, and I don't think the university should back down to the fact that, look, this is educational, this is co-curricular, and a few dollars, extra dollars in somebody's pocket, there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't need to be unlimited either. And there's no reason why a quarterback, should be out there. I was talking to one of my good friends in coaching. I'm not going to name the school, but they paid like a quarter of their NIL money. This is a big-time school, to a quarterback, and the quarterback was not good. And he tanked the season, and all the coaches got fired. And the quarterback didn't care because he was making, like, life-changing money for one season of football. And he was a turnover machine, not a good player, and a locker room cancer, and turned the whole team.
That's the other thing that we don't talk about as much, too, is, like, when you give all this money to players, we talk about, oh, they're so good, they just transfer. What about the ones that aren't very good?
Yeah.
And you've already written the check, and you've already gotten all these other deals. Coach, what is so mind-boggling to me, because I from the beginning, I followed this stuff. It's fascinating to me. But it was supposed to be Billy the Kid signs on to a football team. He's already there. He's there. Now he's starting to work with boosters, the collective, whatever. And they're coming in saying, yeah, we like you, Billy. You're great. We support you. We want you to stay here. We want to help you out. Here's $500 to tweet about us and how great our gas station is. Now it's turned into Billy's signing with Alabama and he's going to get $1 million.
Right.
Like, I read that and I go, wait, I thought that was against the rules. I thought you were supposed to get there first and then develop and foster those relationships, and you have NIL deals. Now the NIL deals are being presented to you at the door before you sign so you can weigh your options. And that somehow just dissolved? Like that just somehow became okay? That's
right.
Strange to me.
Right. Yeah, it's and theoretically, it could all happen without the coach's knowledge, correct?
Yeah.
Like, a local business supporting XYZ University could be just as excited about a recruit as they are a current player. We all know the likelihood of that. It's the same likelihood that the SEC hasn't been always paying players. Mm-hmm. And so it's really interesting that when NIL and revenue share started to actually become legalized, the power has shifted away from the SEC. The Big Ten is now dominating the national championship mm-hmm. scene, right? And so I think there's that's kind of really enlightening that to see that we all in the business have always known that the SEC was doing that, and you're just kind of like, well, they have that somehow, and the rest of us are not willing to cross that line. Like there's some lines that we haven't crossed
sure.
yet. So we have revenue share now. Some of our players make a little bit more than a full scholarship. It's a reward. It's an over award. It's a revenue share, NIL, whatever you want to call it. But I can tell you that we have not had any recruits join us in that category. So zero inducements. You have to earn it. You have to come here and earn it through being one of the top players.
And the inducement part of it, I guess, Coach, that became more or less okay once the court case passed. Was that last year? With the revenue share, when schools basically opted into that, that's when it became like you can just throw out, you'll get $1 million if you come here. You'll get $50,000 if you come here, whatever. And so that's why I suppose that kind of dissolved before our very eyes. But it's still just so fascinating to me.
And if the president or the legislatures, the powers that be would just kind of let that marinate for a while – NIL will definitely go away. The revenue share fixes the NIL like crooked type of stuff. Like a business owner now can just go directly to the school and give revenue, which is tax deductible. By the way, the NIL money was not tax deductible because they would have to claim that as a business expense, mm-hmm. which is a different type of tax deduction, right?
Sure.
Now you can just give the money directly to a football program or basketball program or whatever. And the coach can dole it out in terms of revenue share. And then there's a little bit of a salary cap on the revenue share, right? Each university is responsible to determine how that salary cap is split up amongst sports and men's and women's sports. And there are decisions to be made. But I think that's one of the cool parts about running any business is that you get to run it the way you want. And there are some parameters. But I think that the idea of NIL is kind of going away anyway. I think in 10 years, nobody would be talking about NIL other than kind of what you already described, a very organic type of arrangement.
They do their own endorsement type of deal on the side.
It's a legit endorsement.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's what I was going to ask you next on. But you're obviously saying, yeah, there will still be that, but it won't be one of those things where you're actually promising that.
Yeah.
To the player, hey, by the way, you come here, it's revenue share, we're going to give you whatever we're going to give you. But we also know that there's 14 donors that are going to be willing to – that you're thinking that kind of might go away. That's more of a organic thing. Once they get here and a knucklehead like me reaches out to a kid and says, hey, you want to do a radio show? I got a sponsor. We'll give you money for it. You think that we could get back to – because that's kind of when – that's where it started with NIL.
Right.
And you think we'll at least get back to that point where it's more of a – we're not using that as a – carrot to get you here. It's just something that you could work on your own time with your marketing agency or whatever.
Right. And so the way that will shape up, if it's just allowed to happen, you'll see that football being the ultimate team sport, there, if you pay attention to NFL football, nobody talks about the endorsement contracts that football players have.
Mm-mm.
Because it's kind of football is such a team sport and guys can be injured at any time. And one player just, doesn't usually make a team in the sport of football, whereas basketball, endorsement contracts are huge. And then individual sports like golf, endorsement contracts, that's all you talk about, right? In golf, they make a lot more money, the top players do, on their endorsements than they do on the prize money, right, for individual tournaments. So I think it would go the same direction where men's basketball – you would have big endorsements and NIL potentially still in college basketball, but you would not in football. In fact, right now, even with the kind of the revenue share / NIL model, hybrid model that we currently have, most big time football schools are completely wasting their money on a few roster kids who aren't moving the needle for the team.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Sorry to hijack the show. And because I know we talk a lot of UNC football, but I love picking your brain on all this stuff. Because I talk about this on a daily basis, but to actually get you to talk about this on a regular basis is really entertaining for me, so I apologize.
It's
very self-serving for me.
Yeah, we spend time on it as a staff. We talk to our players. We have I've got a PowerPoint slide where we talk about how to ascend through our program from the walk-on player who's trying to make the tryout and make the team to the very top level of our team. The top quartile is the way we've set it up, where you're actually over-awarded more money than what a full scholarship would be. And I think it's a big, exciting part of where college football is, and the coaches and programs that can navigate it correctly to somehow move up the recruiting food chain instead of waste money and not move at all on the recruiting food chain. That's the really interesting dynamic to me.
Well, and again, this is where we point back to what your program's doing. It does seem like that organic, that right way to do it, is to recruit young guys, to develop them here, to give them all the tools they need. You're not just going out. Your program specifically is not just going out and saying, hey, we need four tight ends, but we're gonna invite 30 of them and then just let it happen. And then those other, 25 guys, 26 guys are just gone. You are looking at these guys, bringing them in, really developing them, not just on the football field, but throughout life too. Whereas a lot of these schools, we talked a lot about LSU and what happened with Eric Gibson Jr., are just throwing out that wide net and bringing so many different players in.
Yeah, the sexy thing right now for college football programs, everybody's going to try to do it like Indiana now, is like to be a hunter. You're a hunting staff. You go and you hunt these high-profile players rated on 247, or they have a certain amount of productivity, and you're going to go be this hunter group. And recruiting has completely changed from what it was just 5 years ago. Now you've got whole staffs. You've got 6-7 staff members going and visiting one player. That would never have happened like 5 years ago, especially 10 years ago, where you went out as an assistant coach and spent 2, 3, 4, or 5 weeks in an area of the country stopping at high schools. That doesn't really happen anymore at most programs. We're not hunters. We're farmers. We're planting seeds. We're recruiting high school kids. We're recruiting local high school kids. We are, in many cases, delaying their initial enrollment to allow them to mature even more, and then sticking with them for 3 and 4 years until they actually make a contribution on the field. That's just starting to pay off. You saw just a glimpse of it last year, and I'm so excited about the way it's going to pay off this year.
Coach, let me ask you this one. I got two side questions, and then obviously today we're gonna put the focus on your tight end group, because we still want to. This is 100. I mean, this is like 80% of UNC Bears football podcast. But I'd be an idiot if I didn't take advantage of having a D1 head football coach in this room once a week, Coach, and picking your brain. If gun to your head, the biggest issue in college sports today. Like one thing, if you could point out and say, that's where I think we need to be focusing on.
Again, I've said, I've told you before that kind of I look through everything in terms of the lens of player development, and not just development for what we can accomplish on the field for these guys, but how can we change their lives? How can I have a relationship with them 20, 25 years from now, even with their parents, to say that they came here, changed their lives for the better, and now they're accomplishing these things as citizens, fathers, captains of industry. And so I think what's been created through the internet, through NIL, through just the information that's out there and the way it's portrayed, social media, there's an entitlement right now. Entitlement problem in college football, where these players think that they're owed something more than they are.
Yeah,
the pure type of level, like we have it set up at UNC, where okay, you've got to be one of our top players, but it's three-pronged for us. You've got to be one of our top players on the field. You basically have to be a starter or a projected starter. You have to be bringing our team GPA up. Our team GPA is a 3.3, so the 3.2 is bringing us down. Mm-hmm. And then you have to be in the top half of our community service ledger, so we keep track of all community service opportunities that we offer as a team, as activities. That type of dynamic, I believe, sets these players up for success in life and an understanding of how life works. You know, the way that most programs are doing it right now, where if you're a really talented quarterback, then you're worth this amount of dollars. Well, there's still the same amount of wins and losses across the country. Mm-hmm. And so you have these million-dollar quarterbacks where the left guard that's blocking for them is making $10,000 a year, but the quarterback's making $2.4 million, and they still only won three games.
Yeah,
that's kind of the dynamic right now where I think about the entitlement problem, where because I'm worried about that quarterback. I'm worried about that quarterback 20 years from now. And the way that, you know, for me and all the guys that I played with, the game changed our life for the better and taught us that we can do hard things and accomplish things, and changed our personalities. And I'm worried about that a young player now who's having to justify making that money and still losing and letting his team down. And then, you know, what type of success we aren't setting that player up for.
Creates a lot of different pressures when there already are a lot of those pressures. When you're a Division I athlete, you're a Division I quarterback, now you're adding completely different dynamic to this too. And then last one on this, Coach, and we don't have to get into a lot of details here, but I think of a specific player of yours, and I got a lot of respect for him. He was in this room, Fisher Clemens. We're talking about the tight end group today, so it kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
you know, he hit the transfer portal, and he's going to play at CU. And I look at that, and I think, good player, you know, good player. But I'm not 100%. I mean, he's going to go try to play. My gut tells me, and I've said this on the whole show, that's a name that probably just kind of gets forgotten about there in Boulder. And you don't have to necessarily comment on that. But that's something that I worry about too, where it's like he's probably making some kind of money to go to CU, but not to start, not to be the number two tight end, not to be the number three tight end. And that bothers me. And that's why I presented this idea, and you and I talked a little bit about it before. It's like, I think that if you get a guy like Fisher Clemens or any player, and you're developing this player, and then a school comes in, and they're like, yeah, we're going to give him $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, whatever it is. We all know he's going to be a depth guy. I think the player and or the school should be responsible for paying a little buyout to you guys. So it's like you get something to show for it. Like Dalton Knecht going to Tennessee. They didn't even know how to say Knecht. They didn't know how to pronounce his name when he was at JUCO. And Smiley goes out and finds this guy. You got a ton of dudes last year. I mean, no one was talking about Carver Cheeks on any kind of level. No one was talking about Cam Choppa and like some of these really good players that you guys are going out and finding. I think there should be a finder's fee somewhat tagged to letters of intent or whatever their contracts are called now. You should be able to stamp on there. You enter the portal, and wherever you go, you and or that team are responsible for paying the UNC Bears $20,000.
Yeah.
Stupid idea? Great idea.
No, and in some ways it always exists, but because you brought up four guys by name, let me just quick hit one of those because they are great examples of how you could or should leave. So in Fisher's case, you know, regardless of what his on-field role at Colorado becomes, right? Because it could be anything. It could be an all-conference Big 12 player.
Could
do some amazing things. But he graduated from here. He didn't play as much last year as he would want to for UNC. Part of that was an injury that was holding him back. Part of that was we had a really strong tight end room. And so he was – even when he was healthy, he was rotating in with some other really good players. We had Hank Gibbs. We had Charlie Garrison, who was the top tight end in the conference.
Yeah.
And then a young Brody Judd, who, you know, this year will be our top tight end. And so But for Fisher to make a vertical move and have the chance to now play Power 4 football and have degree in hand, kind of accomplished everything at UNC that you would expect. And then in the case of like Cam Chapa, okay, well, he didn't graduate. He's only a sophomore. But he got a big opportunity at the University of Arizona after delivering for the Bears, came and talked to me, was deliberate about his decision. I think an inspiration for young players at UNC, can I do what Cam did? I hope that guys are asking that question. And if they can accomplish what Cam did here and then move on to a Power 4 opportunity, great. And then the other two guys that, you know, in terms of Carver Cheeks and Braden Monroe, those are the four guys that got into the portal for opportunities. We had some, you know, we had very few guys get into the portal overall, but most of the other guys went because they wanted a new start or more playing time or something like that. But in terms of like guys that were going in looking for an increased opportunity, well, Carver and Braden also accomplished a lot here. They didn't go Power 4, UTEP and Kennesaw State. You know, not probably their you know, their goal when they went into the portal. However, they had 1 year left, and they had a goal to play FBS football. And I'm supportive of that. If you know, if you work your tail off for the Bears, you deliver on the field, and then you feel like that's the best thing for you. Now, what will be interesting in terms of Fisher and Cam and Carver and Braden, do they develop to their fullest potential at these new schools? And then set themselves up for a pro opportunity. You know what I mean? The second best receiver at a UTEP or Kennesaw or tight end at Colorado is not going to the NFL, but the top receiver at UNC and the top receivers in the Big Sky, those guys will have NFL opportunities.
Sure.
And so that's, I think, what you want all players, and not really talking about those four guys, like good on them, super excited for their future and all that and wishing them success. But that's what I hope that all players will take into account. Okay, so back to the original.
Wonderful idea.
Yeah, the original question. That already exists.
Okay.
I can. So it used to be that we had a standardized contract in football called the National Letter of Intent, NLI, which is often confused with NIL, the National Letter of Intent.
Why are you guys got to try to confuse me with all this stuff?
You've heard that term before.
It
used to be used a lot more. Well, we don't use the NLI anymore. We don't use that. It's the NCAA, you know, terminated the contract with National Letter of Intent, which is just a company that was producing these contracts. I can now, as the head football coach at UNC, write my own contracts for recruits, and so can any other coach in Division I football. And so we could write that in. Cam Chapa, for example. If and when you leave UNC, if you leave to go to another university, you would owe this amount of money. And if they sign it, then, you know, I guess you take it to the courts if they're unwilling to pay it back. Mm. So we haven't gone into that yet because it's already a thing. We could kind of do that conceivably at UNC because we're not really recruiting head to head a lot of times. But you would never do that at Colorado. You're putting a buyout in somebody's contract, and then Arizona or Arizona State within the same league are not putting the buyout in. You would never have a chance.
And if
to
I'm
get
that kid,
recruits.
I'm going to go to the place that doesn't put a buyout on.
Exactly.
There. Okay. Well, you shot that idea down.
Sorry.
Well, then the next idea would just be you gotta have them sign something that actually commits them there, like a 2-year minimum. Can we not at least do a 2-year minimum on these dudes?
Well, for us, right, just where I'm currently at with UNC, with the Bears, I want for all of our signees and players on our team to understand that there are possibilities for them to accomplish great things here and look at the option of transferring, but I want them to consider whether that's actually best for them or not. And I think we're in a good place right now. We had the lowest number of guys in our conference going to the portal.
Yeah.
We're building it from the ground up. Guys really do want to maximize their time here. And so I think we're in a healthy place. So right now I'm not concerned about losing players. Like I said, all four of those guys that I just mentioned, they may have made the right decision for themselves. We'll kind of find out, and so will they, and that was a risk they were willing to take. So good on them. But we haven't had – like when I took over the program, 38 players got in the portal from that I wasn't even, like, before I even stepped foot on campus.
It was so hard to follow.
It was ridiculous. Yeah.
Look like, yeah.
None of those guys really, you know, I mean, maybe a couple of them, I didn't really like do the math on it, but most of those guys were like calling us months later, like, hey, is there still an opportunity? I was here with Coach McCaffrey, et cetera. And it's like, no, like we moved on. Like, mm-hmm. The Bears have moved on. So, that kind of thing is not happening right now at UNC. Like the guys are proud to be a part of this program. They want to maximize their opportunity here. And so right now we're kind of standing pat on how we're doing it.
Man, I could sit here and talk to you about this for 5 hours straight and just have you shut
down. Got to have me back on the whole show sometime.
Oh, well, that's anytime. You know, that's an open invitation. You could literally just show up, sit down, because my brain is always, I got tons of crap in there, but I'm always thinking about this college football thing because that storyline of it. But to hear that you say that, hey, the buyout thing is already kind of a deal. Well, there goes my genius plan. Yeah. And it's already something that you could technically, theoretically do.
Some of the biggest, I think if you Google it, you could find it, but some of the biggest contracts that are out there being signed right now by some of those quarterbacks and players like that, they do have buyouts.
Well, and I knew that there was like the NIL buyout, because now you got a bunch of lawsuits going on where it's like, hey, we gave you $1 million and you didn't fulfill you said you were going to be here for 2 years. You didn't fulfill all that, so you owe us $475,000. But I was even directly just looking at it. They enter the portal, team picks them up, team writes you a
transfer fee.
Does that happen?
Like European soccer and stuff like that.
Is that a real thing?
I would love for it to move in that direction where it's just standardized. But again, until it's standardized, you have to make a decision as a coach. Are you helping yourself in recruiting or hurting yourself recruiting?
And that's the big, big hole that you just punched in it, because if I'm a kid and I'm looking at schools that don't have that tag on there, and I like jumping, and I think I want to look at I'm probably not going to go to the school that's going to lock me in, where if I go somewhere, that school is responsible for paying money.
The biggest detriment right now to college football recruiting and in college football period in that regard is 247 Sports. They are wagging the dog. They are the tail that's wagging the dog, because I have friends at the Power Four level that are specifically recruiting stars based on 247 ratings, and they are in fear that if they don't recruit and gather enough stars, that the fan base will turn on them and then the head coach and the athletic director and replace them because they didn't recruit enough stars. Regardless of how their position group is playing, regardless of wins and losses, 247 is now rating recruiters based on the number of stars that the recruiters accumulate on the 247 rating. I don't even know, like, even just the math of that.
It doesn't work. Yeah.
Like, wait, you're going to rate me based on your rating of the players that I'm recruiting?
And for some players your rating might be spot on because you have guys that are actually – there's no way that outlet can effectively grade every single player that's coming out of high school.
The math is already there. Just go take an NFL roster and then go look at the rating.
Yeah.
You know, go look at the draft and look at the ratings. And sure, there's going to be some 5 stars and 4 stars that are all over the draft, but there's 3 stars and 2 stars and no stars that are all over the draft, or the all-conference teams or the Super Bowl or however you want to quantify it. Good on 247 for providing something, but the internet – and the message boards and the fact that athletic directors and coaches are they're beholden to a lot of these what are like public opinions. It used to be the only public opinion that anybody was aware of was an experienced journalist who had earned the right to kind of speak and criticize. And that was all you worried about as a coach. And now any fan at any time can start to really get in there and criticize you in a way that other people buy into, and then you're done. And I think it's really dangerous to all the young people young kids who are out there with potential, but 247 doesn't recognize it. And then here we go, where you got kids that are unrecruited. But you know what? The Bears right now are making a living on that broken piece of college football.
And I love it. I love talking about – and again, bringing up the Fisher stuff and Cam Chop and those Carver, Braden, like it was all from a positive standpoint where it's like, hey, you're getting to that point now where you're going to have a handful of guys, and the next year you're going to have more guys than that. Coach, let's look at it. We got a few minutes here. Do you want to focus on the tight ends next week? Or because, I mean, we only have about 4 minutes until you're jumping on. Do you want to do this next week? Because I want to give these guys the attention they deserve. But at the same time, you know, I know we've been unpacking a lot of college stuff.
Sure. Yo, you're the host. And so I think this cliffhanger is like, this is, you know, for the those who are out there listening to this, just for the tight end roster,
yes,
they might come back next week okay. even more excited.
Let's do, and again, this is no disrespect
and
for—
And we mentioned Brody Judd.
Brody
who's,
Judd.
Who's having a tremendous offseason, going to be one of the best tight ends in the country.
I can't wait, actually. Yeah. And I want to— I'm going to probably have to reach out to the information crew over there at UNC, but I want to bring him on for an interview at some point. Maybe we'll That'd bring cool. you on back on the whole show, and then we bring him on for an interview, and you just grill him.
Great young man. He's a high performer in every area on and off the field. He's doing a fantastic job, and it'd be good to talk about him next week and some of the other guys. There are a lot of guys with development potential in that group, and we've got some exciting things going on in that group, but it'll be a lot of new faces. Brody appeared at times last year on the field in a four-man tight end group, and so for him to even earn that playing time last year kind of shows what his abilities are.
You have obviously a lot of Colorado guys up and down the board, but it seems like just based on your roster, a lot of Colorado dudes in that tight end position specifically. And then I think there's one tight end there, Cheyenne guy too, so not that far away.
It's a developmental position, right? And so the most developmental positions of offensive line, defensive line, linebackers, tight ends, that's where we're going to have a lot of Colorado kids, because that's where you can really lean into a geographic area. We're talking about developmental kids, not necessarily ready-made kids. I think as you go to receiver or running back, kicker, quarterback, well, there's not a ton of development potential. You got to have a certain skill level with some of those positions. And so in that case, if they're not available in Colorado, we might have to start to look into other places.
Well, next week we'll break into the tight end position a little more. This is all about me at the end of the day, Coach. Me developing my depth chart here.
It's all about
I've got my notes here. Once this is done and we're done with our position review, I'm actually gonna type them up because I don't want you to read my handwriting. And then I'm going to develop what I believe based on these conversations, which you know, I thought I was getting somewhere with these too, because I was like, okay, I'm going to, the names he mentions first, those are the ones he's really focused on. Just like you mentioned a Brody Judd. Well, that's an easy one. But it turns out you were kind of going in alphabetical order.
Numerical order.
Numerical order.
I think because what I do, I've got my phone right here. You've seen it. And then as soon as you start talking about a position, I'll pull up our roster. Uh-huh. And when you sort it, for some reason, if you sort the roster by position, the next default sort mechanism is roster number.
Yep.
And so then I'll have, for example, the tight ends, and it'll be sorted by number. And so,
I thought for weeks, I'm like, man, I'm going to get one over coach here. I'm going to send him this and be like, hey, how's my aim? And you're really, you just listed them based on their numbers. Good job, man.
Quarter.
Yeah. I can count. That's exciting. Coach, this is so much fun. I love doing these. Bummer this week, by the way, as we're recording this on the 11th, both the women's team and the men's team knocked out of the Big Sky Conference tournament.
Yeah, that was tough, especially with our men to be so dominant over Montana the week before and then drop that. And that's sports. You know, it's really hard to beat a team two times in close proximity like that. And obviously there's one team has a little more motivation. And so if they can get over that hump and be around late, we were all looking for it to be, where the Bears would open up a big lead and Montana would kind of, you know, get lose heart, but Montana played really well. And, the Bears fought to the very end, just kind of gave up that fast break in the last moment there. It's a closer game than the final score.
Yeah.
And I know this, both the men's and women's teams have been inspirational to our players because they compete so well and they finish in the top part of the league. And, kind of if basketball can do it, football can do it. I think there's a lot of that going on in the department. So still proud of both teams and the efforts, and I'm sure they're disappointed. It's always disappointing to have a season end in the way that you don't want, but that's sports, right? There's only one team in the league that's happy at the end of the tournament.
I looked at my wife on Monday because obviously Monday was the legal tampering period for NFL free agency. Broncos didn't do much. The Nuggets lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder, and of course the Bears lost in the tournament. And I looked at my wife and said, I hate this. New show idea. Yeah. I'm just going to get on and review TV shows. Because we love – that's the thing, Coach, man. We love sports so much. We hang on it.
Yeah.
And then when you're delivered a day like that, especially on a Monday, like start of the week, you're like, oh, it's going to be a great week. The Bears are going to roll. And then you just slapped in the face like 13 times. But that's the life of a sports fan.
Oh, yeah. So then you get into the business of sports, which we talked a lot about today, right? There's always something to pivot to.
Always.
The business of sports versus the actual on-field results.
As soon as the Bears lost on Monday, you know, I'm like, this really a bummer. Back over to the Nuggets game. We're going to watch. That's where my focus will be. You got to, as a sports host, if you just lock into one, you're going to live a long life of depression, so you have to bounce around quite a bit.
I know our basketball staff is probably just like very little sleep. It's like because that as soon as the season ends, their kind of portal, all those issues like heat up, and so they are just rapidly changing roster. It's in a way that football would never experience. I mean, we have 105 man roster in football. You're not going to lose 50 something players, but it's quite common for basketball to lose and replace half their roster or more. So I know those guys are grinding and working. They do an excellent job of it every year, rebuilding the team.
I love this college. I love doing this podcast, Coach. I'll let you slide out of here and jump on with the fellows on Good Morning NoCo. And as always, look forward to next week. We will get to that. We'll start the podcast with that. We're going to bust right into the tight end position. So I'm looking forward to that.
Tight ends, as promised.
All right, Coach. Appreciate you, my friend.
Thank you.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.